Hey, just a quick heads up to any international listeners who have found this episode. This is a German podcast, so there will be a short intro in German, but the actual interview with Brian Reed is in English. If you want to go straight to the interview, you should skip forward about 2.5 minutes. Thanks for listening. Herzlich willkommen zu Läuft, dem Podcast von Epidemien und Grimme Institut. Brian Reed ist einer der bekanntesten narrativen Podcaster in den USA. Sein Podcast S-Town von 2017 über die Geschehnisse in einer kleinen Stadt in Alabama und einen ihrer Bewohner, der Reed kontaktiert, damit er einen angeblichen Mord untersucht, wurde über 100 Millionen Mal heruntergeladen. Reed wurde dafür mit dem renommierten Peabody Award ausgezeichnet. KritikerInnen verglichen das Format mit Literatur. Bereits vor S-Town hatte Reed 7 Jahre lang für die Podcast- und Radioinstitution This American Life gearbeitet und sich dort als herausragender journalistischer Geschichtenerzähler einen Namen gemacht. Nach S-Town berichtete er 2022 gemeinsam mit dem jungen Journalisten Hamza Sayed in The Trojan Horse Affair über Schulpolitik und Rassismus in Großbritannien. Schon in The Trojan Horse Affair hatte Reed einer Metaebene seines Reportings viel Zeit eingeräumt. Er verbringt große Teile mehrerer Folgen damit, gemeinsam mit Sayed und entlang ihrer Recherchereise darüber zu diskutieren, was Journalismus kann und darf. Ob eine Recherche schon erfolgreich ist, wenn sie die Wahrheit freigelegt hat, oder ob sie auch gesellschaftlich etwas verändern muss. Diese Frage scheint Brian Reed nicht mehr losgelassen zu haben. Im September dieses Jahres hat er mit seiner Produktionsfirma und dem National Public Radio Sender KCRW den Podcast Question Everything gestartet, der sich erneut darum dreht. Was sollte Journalismus leisten und wie kann er in politisch gespaltenen Zeiten überhaupt noch eine Wirkung entfalten? Was Reed inzwischen, auch nach der Wiederwahl von Donald Trump, durch sein Projekt gelernt hat und welchen Wert journalistische Wahrheit heutzutage überhaupt noch hat, darüber sprechen wir gleich. Ein kleiner Hinweis, Brian Reed und ich haben auf Englisch miteinander gesprochen und das Interview folgt nun auch komplett auf Englisch. Wer es lieber auf Deutsch lesen würde, findet ein übersetztes Transkript online auf grimme-diskurs.de. Ein Link steht auch in den Shownotes. Und als Medienkritik gibt es heute Podcast-Empfehlungen nicht nur von Brian Reed selbst, sondern auch vom So Many Voices Podcast Festival in München. Mein Name ist Alexander Matzkeit. Schön, dass ihr zuhört. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me.
So I've been a listener to This American Life since about the time you joined. And one of the first things I noticed, which was different from traditional radio in Germany or anywhere else, really, is that in many stories you and others reported there, the journalist is often an active character in the story. Now, obviously, this is also true about S-Town and even more about the Trojan Horse Affair, where you actually spend large parts of some episodes discussing the purpose of journalism with your co-host, which means you're obviously used to reflecting on your own profession. Was this also the spark that led to Question Everything?
I mean, definitely part of it. Yeah. The more I was involved in making, especially these kind of big multi-part narrative audio series, S-Town and the Trojan Horse Affair, going through those processes. And then also, you know, a lot of my job is as an editor. So in a lot of cases, I'm helping shape and give feedback on and honing other people's stories and just kind of going through that process as a reporter, but also as an editor. I just came to understand that something about this medium being long form audio, demands that the journalist be a character of someone, you know, to insert themselves into the telling of the story. Because early on, I kind of bristled against it.
How did you wrestle with it?
Well, I kind of bristled against it, but I guess I also wrestled. I remember one of the first kind of big edits of S-Town, the first 3 episodes we read for a group of colleagues. And one of the big editorial questions coming out of those reads was, why is Brian like moving from a phone conversation relationship with John B. McLemore to actually flying down to Alabama? Like, what prompts me to go do that? What, you know, and everybody around the table just started discussing me in the third person. You know, what is Brian's motivation? Like, what is Brian's motivation for going down there? And they're kind of like workshopping motivations for me as if I was a fictional character, you know, being developed in a writer's room for TV. And at one point I was like, guys, I'm right here. You know, I'm a real person. And it was bizarre. But since that point, I totally get it. Like, I've just come to realize, like, you need to explain at certain points in the story why you're doing things. You know, like we're in people's ears in this very intimate manner, telling people a story at length that we've invested some, in some cases years of our lives into, you know, and the listener just understandably wonders why. Like, who are you and why'd you do this? You know, what's your connection to this? What drove you to make this thing and invest all this time and to kind of like follow this obsession you have? Like, what about you? And I think you need to address those things for a listener in most cases. Otherwise, it's kind of a weird listening experience.
So is it something you've accepted or have you actually embraced it?
At first I accepted it. Now I think it's actually, you know, it's actually maybe one of the powers, the unique powers of this medium that I think can be explored further possibly in terms of, yeah, just opportunities it allows to deliver reporting in a new way, to tell stories in a new way. So then with the Trojan Horse Affair, I remember making it. I was co-reporting it with a new reporter, Hamza Syed, who was in journalism school at the time. And I remember, you know, we were recording our reporting process as we were going through it. And I remember thinking, you know, we're going to co-narrate this. And that's going to give us a new power that I've never had as a storyteller before, which is we can be strategic about who's narrating which part and into which scene or which piece of tape. And there might be an example where, for instance, I'm delivering a piece of information or news to Hamza that he doesn't know until I tell him. So I'm surprising him with it. It's a surprise for him. And is it more powerful for me to write into that as the knowing party and then delivering it to him and writing through his reaction from my perspective? Or is it more powerful for Hamza to narrate into that part as the unsuspecting, unknowing party and to receive the information? Or when will we go back and forth? And so I kind of remember in the reporting process, knowing that when we sat down to write, we would have this new storytelling power to play with. And that was really exciting. It was one of the things that motivated me like through that process, even when it was a very difficult reporting process. And I think it was really fun to play with. And I think that's one of the things we're doing in that story that's new in the medium, actually.
So how did this lead into Question Everything?
In 2018, I got sued by a group of lawyers who were claiming that S-Town was not journalism. I very much believed and thought that it was, but I found myself in this position of having to kind of prove before a judge that what I'd made was journalism, which is an odd exercise to actually have to go through. You know, usually we take our professions for granted. And I'm not just talking about journalists. I mean, any profession. So that got me thinking about my work kind of, midway through my career in a new way. And at the same time, I was reporting the Trojan Horse Affair. And I was reporting it, like I mentioned, with a new reporter, Hamza Syed. It was his first story ever. And from the very first week of reporting, I could see that he was having a drastically different experience of the work than I had ever had in my 10 years doing it. Hamza's a British Pakistani who lived in Birmingham, England, and the story we were reporting had affected the British Pakistani community there very negatively. And so he was reporting on this story that had really, you know, directly affected his community and embodied a bunch of racism and mistreatment at the hands of the British government. And, you know, I was this outsider who'd come in, this white American outsider, to look at this story kind of with this detached parachute in perspective. And us going through that experience and, you know, walking out of interviews, and Hamza would have like all these feelings and takeaways, and I would just kind of be like processing it kind of in this detached way, and we would start to debate about it. And we realized we really had different understandings of how journalism should be done. And so I just, at the same time, I was both like defending my work from these outside people who'd brought this lawsuit and debating the very nature of it with my closest collaborator at the time over the course of a couple of years, while the world has just continued to change and the media ecosystem has continued to splinter and fracture and lose the trust of the public. And just a lot of the things that I saw playing out in my own work and my own day-to-day felt relevant to what we've been experiencing, certainly as a country here, but as a society, I think.
That's interesting that you mentioned this, because I think there's actually a pretty rich tradition of media journalism as well in the US, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not like a huge media journalism consumer until recent years, frankly. A lot of it in my experience is, you know, there's a lot of reporting about like the companies and executives and anchors and, you know, like, you know, reporting that I read, but that is, it feels like it's for a pretty specific audience of people who work in media, you know, or kind of adjacent to it. And I'm interested in the journalists' relationship with the public at large and our, and kind of our ability to fulfill our mission and even to agree on what a mission is with them.
So in the intro to the first episode, you actually state that mission. You wanted to find out if, quote, journalism is achieving what it wants to, or if it's broken. What have you learned so far in the first 3 months?
Learned a lot. Yeah, it's a real-time journey where we're kind of collecting insights and lessons as we go. I'll just run through a few of the takeaways that have stayed with me for sure. You know, our first episode, I spoke to a fellow journalist who thought that S-Town was morally indefensible and had criticized it as such in The Guardian. And yeah, what came out of that conversation for me was just kind of pushing me on my idea of what it means to be transparent in our work and to kind of bring listeners inside of our thought process of why we're making certain decisions, why we're deciding to do a story, why we're deciding to report certain information. And kind of I came out of that conversation with her, her name was Gay Alcorn, understanding that I could have mitigated some of her reaction and earned more trust with her and other people who felt that way listening by being more transparent about our decision-making within the story. Whereas at the time, I kind of felt like that ruined the story, you know, to kind of pull back the curtain in that way. Moving on from that, we really turned to a lot of stories that have looked at kind of the crisis of truth we're having, certainly in America. The fact that, you know, we don't agree on a shared set of facts amongst ourselves. We did a story about a newsletter that seems to be having some success solving that, at least kind of bridging disparate realities and disparate media diets. It's called Tangle. And also, like, it reinforced the transparency idea. You know, we found multiple readers who basically had disagreements with their close family members, in one case, a married couple, where they were on different sides of the political spectrum, but also specifically just reading different news sources and trusting different news sources. And so they didn't have the same shared reality. And it was really tearing these relationships apart. Then enter this newsletter, Tangle, which goes about in a very deliberate way, trying to present issues and reporting from across the political spectrum in a way that can be trusted and kind of appreciated by people from various political perspectives. And one of the ways they do that is through transparency. Basically, you know, after laying out different arguments and reporting from across the spectrum, the creator of the newsletter, this guy named Isaac Saul, does a whole section called Isaac's Take at the end, where he really says in brutal detail what he thinks about the issue after having looked at all the facts. And so you're getting like this collection of, you know, fact-checked facts, you know, a well-rounded assessment of an issue. But then you're also getting a ton of transparency by the author rather than pretending to have a view from nowhere like a lot of mainstream publications do, traditional publications.
And also the author basically admits that he's a flawed person as well, right?
Well, he's a person. Yeah. And the way that, like, I think this is part of podcast appeal, you know, you get to know the host and it feels like a person you're dealing with rather than an institution. Mm-hmm. In general, I think there's a trend towards that. So I learned a lot from what he's doing. It seems to be having a fair amount of success. And by success, I mean, it's bringing people closer to a shared set of facts that are true and verifiable, which I think is a success for journalism. What else? What else?
I mean, we can cycle back to this idea of truth that you already mentioned, because that's come up time and again, I think, in the episodes you've put out. I think Ira Glass already touched on it in episode 2, where he's basically said, well, we used to think that we would just, you know, say what is true and that would, you know, have an impact. But nowadays, it doesn't seem to have an impact anymore. So do you still see any value in truth as like a good that's like apart from everything else?
I do, yeah. But I've come to realize that we really need to think a lot about the way we're packaging, delivering truth, you know, and the way we're going about finding it and presenting it, you know, which I always knew, but just this project has really brought that home for me, you know? So even Ira, like in that same conversation, brings up his idea of like, you know, it's not enough to just present truth. It doesn't work to actually affect people's thinking. Then he kind of proposes an idea he's been turning over, which is like, we need to find someone who kind of just people of a certain political perspective, you know, in that case, he was talking about on the right, just chemically trust, like a comedian or personality where there's just a chemical trust there, you know, and they don't smell some kind of outsider status on them, and have that person, you know, of which there are a number who exist, as we've seen, like in the recent election, but have that person deliver information that is, has had journalistic principles applied to it, you know, that it has been fact checked, that, you know, where comment has been sought, where, you know, contravening evidence is included, but it's delivered in this way through this vehicle that connects with people on a more emotional and kind of just trust level. And that's, you know, in a different way, that's what Isaac is doing with Tangle. Like, he's finding different ways to do that, to just build that trust and package it in a way where, you know, the facts alone are not enough, you know. And that also came out in another episode we did. You know, we had a really damaging lie going around here that came out of the mouths of the vice president and president-elect about Haitian immigrants eating animals. And they were just saying this, it wasn't true. And we did an episode kind of looking at different ways to how journalists should approach that problem. And kind of where we land in the episode is that just fact-checking that it wasn't true, going to the police department and getting the police report where this was drawn from and showing that that claim that Haitians were eating animals was not true based on the evidence wasn't enough. You know, it paled against the force of these lies coming from two of the most powerful people in the country. And so you needed to do more. And I'm not even sure this solves it either, but at least it goes, it does something more, which is like putting it in context, you know, using more aggressive language in response, getting at the motivation that politicians might have to tell the lie. You know, there seemed to be agreement in the people we spoke to for that episode, the reporters, that, you know, just fact-checking is not enough.
I mean, I know there's been a lot of think pieces and discussions about the role of the media in getting Trump reelected. I think we have many of the same arguments in Germany concerning populist and far-right parties, you know, how much room to give them, how to present them, how to fact-check them, everything we just talked about. But I'm really interested in your take on this. Do you think journalists should have done anything differently?
That's a really big question. I don't know. I treat that as a reporting question. I'm less interested in think pieces, frankly. I mean, I've read some of them, and I'm not saying I take nothing from them, but I treat it more as a question than something like I'm postulating on, you know? Mm-hmm. I think the press did report on Donald Trump's promises and, you know, and what his election can mean. You know, I think there was a lot of criticism before this go-round that the press was a little more focused, was more focused on the horse race of the election than the stakes of it for the country and our democracy. I believe that was significantly less true this time. Yet, I think it's this thing I'm talking about. There's something about our reporting that, yeah, only half the country hears it from like traditional outlets. And so what use is that exactly? You know, there is some use to that, obviously, but it is a limited use. And there's something about, we're not providing a product that is reaching across viewpoints enough and fostering a shared reality and kind of set of understandings and values around that reality. And I think there are people who argue that is not a journalist's role, but I don't think it's really happening. And it might partly explain kind of the fractured situation we're in.
Okay, so let's be more concrete. Have you had reactions maybe from colleagues hearing your podcast and, you know, saying maybe I've never thought about it this way or something like that?
I more hear reporters writing me saying, I have been thinking about the same things, and I'm glad you're giving voice to them. There are probably some instances of people saying, I haven't thought about it this way, but certainly I'd say the more common reaction is like, yeah, these are crises I've been going through personally. You know, this is what people have said to me, and I'm glad that kind of like you're giving a place for people to air them and talk about them. I do think a lot of journalists feel lost. That I know from my reporting. Like, journalists and thinkers about journalism, people who care about journalism, academics in this world. You know, a big example is in our third episode with Barton Gellman, you know, one of the great investigative reporters of our time who brought us the Snowden leaks. You know, he talks about quitting journalism after having a crisis of confidence in it and its ability to affect change, certainly at this time. And I've just heard different versions of that from a lot of people who I really look to, like Barton Gellman, for guidance, you know, emulation, learning, and to hear that they're so lost and not sure what to make of this moment or what journalism can do it's both frightening, you know, and anxiety in producing, but also perversely comforting, because there's some solidarity there. Like, oh, it's okay to feel a little lost. These guys do too, you know. But I think it's a big story. Like, actually, there, I think there's like, it's underappreciated how the press are not sure what our role is right now, or how to accomplish what we think we're supposed to accomplish traditionally, you know?
Do you think it has to get even worse before it before something changes? I mean, you've the most recent episode that has aired as we speak was about the threats that Donald Trump has put out against the press, against journalists.
I don't think it has to get worse. I don't think that's the only way. I would hope not. Could it getting worse inspire some more dramatic change? Possibly. I could see some, you know, solidarity coming out of like some real severe press freedom attacks. I could see that. But I would hope to God that it doesn't have to get worse for us to do some reassessment and try to strive to be better.
I'll close with a question that's a little bit lighter. I just wanted to ask you, finally, if you just want to recommend a podcast other than your own that you find very good at the moment, maybe that touches on some of the ideas that we've talked about.
Yeah, let me look at my feed right now. What am I listening to? Hold on. I mean, it's a lot of media shows, honestly. I'm going to recommend Search Engine by PJ Vogt, which, you know, definitely delves into topics related to this. There's been a number of good episodes he's done with Ezra Klein talking about how do we survive the media apocalypse, but he also goes into all sorts of other, sometimes lighter, but certainly different topics as well.
I also think he's very present in this show. Like, he says he's answering questions, but really he's, you know, thinking about them aloud.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's hard to make good narrative audio without putting yourself in it, you know? Like, we're the ones doing the interviews. We're the ones having the questions. You know, it's just different than reading print, you know, where you just can kind of print the answer. In our medium, you have to hear us ask the question. And once you do that, you're getting some sense of the person asking it, you know? And the next question is the kind of next logical thought experiment is why? What? Who is this person and why are they asking? And I think questions that are kind of obligatory journalistic questions, like I'm just putting this to you because I'm supposed to, because I'm a journalist, do us a disservice in our medium. The questions have to be genuine, really, for them to land from the person asking them.
Ryan Reed, thank you very much.
Thanks, Alex. It was a pleasure.
Wie am Anfang bereits erwähnt, eine deutschsprachige Textversion dieses Interviews findet ihr online auf grimme-diskurs.de. Question Everything erscheint seit 12. September alle zwei Wochen überall, wo es Podcasts gibt. Am 22. und 23. November war ich auf der Podcast-Konferenz So Many Voices in München. Und wie schon im Sommer auf der Republika in Berlin, habe ich auch diesmal wieder die Gelegenheit genutzt und von einigen Anwesenden persönliche Medientipps eingesammelt. Diesmal, dem Thema der Konferenz und der Sendung entsprechend, alles internationale Podcast-Tipps. Mit dabei sind Veranstalterin Susanne Klingner, Kritiker und Producer Sandro Schröder, Telephobia-Macherin Lea Utz und Azadeh Peshman, die die Konferenz mit einer Keynote zum Thema »Brauchen wir eine Podcast-Lobby?« eröffnete. Viel Spaß.
Ich bin Azadeh Peshman, ich bin Moderatorin und Podcast-Producerin und habe Rabbit Hole Media gegründet. Und meine Podcast-Empfehlungen sind einmal You Didn't See Nothing und portugiesischsprachig A Mulher da Casa Abandonada und generell eine sehr, sehr gute Podcast-Show, diesmal spanischsprachig, Radio Ambulante. Weil die Geschichten sehr tiefgehend erzählt werden und weil ich über Radio Ambulante vor allem auch sehr, sehr gute Einblicke bekomme in unterschiedliche Länder in Südamerika, die ich jetzt so über die Auslandsberichterstattung gar nicht bekommen würde.
Hi, ich bin Sandro Schröder. Ich schreibe den Hörensagen-Newsletter über Podcasts und meine Podcast-Empfehlung ist der Podcast 20.000 Hertz. Das ist ein Podcast über Sounddesign von einer Firma, die auch viel Sounddesign macht. Und das sind total liebenswerte, detailverliebte Folgen über Sounds, Geräusche, teilweise auch Melodien, die unser Leben bestimmen, von der Werbung bis zum Sound des Autos. Und die tauchen da sehr tief ab in, wie funktioniert eigentlich das, was wir da wahrnehmen und warum ist das so einflussreich, was wir in der Werbung hören, was das Sounddesign in Filmen ausmacht. Das ist ein sehr toller Podcast.
Hi, ich bin Susanne Klingner, Co-Gründerin von Haus 1 und ich höre momentan wahnsinnig gerne den US-amerikanischen Podcast Sounds Like a Cult. Es ist ein fortlaufender Podcast und in jeder Folge besprechen die beiden Hosts so Alltagsgruppen und Phänomene eigentlich. Also das kann dann zum Beispiel die Spinning-Klasse sein oder das kann die Kardashians sein. Aber ganz viele verschiedene Themen schauen die sich an, wie kultig sind die eigentlich? Also wie, welche Gruppendynamiken gibt's und so? Und ich bin auf den gestoßen, als ich mit Marlene Heiser an Just Love, an dem Podcast über diese hessische Sekte gearbeitet habe. Und man wird ja total angefixt an dieses Thema Sekten und wie präsent die eigentlich sind. Und dieser Podcast Sounds Like a Cult, der befriedigt es total, einfach mal alles anzugucken, wie sektenhaft so bestimmte Gruppen sind.
Hi, ich bin Lea Utz. Ich arbeite im BR Story Team und mache da den Podcast Telephobia. Und ich habe einen Podcast-Tipp, der eigentlich überhaupt kein Geheimtipp mehr ist, aber ich höre nicht auf, diesen Tipp zu verteilen, bis jeder Mensch, den ich kenne, diesen Podcast mal gehört hat. Und zwar ist das Rumble Strip, ein Podcast von einer Podcasterin aus einer kleinen Community in Vermont. Erika Heilmann heißt die. Und die ist einfach wahnsinnig gut darin, sich Menschen zu nähern. Also es sind super spannende Begegnungen mit den unterschiedlichsten Menschen. Eine Folge, die mich am allermeisten berührt hat, da geht es um die Mutter eines Jugendlichen, der Suizid begangen hat, auch aus dieser Community. Und die Art und Weise, wie sie erzählt, ist absolut entwaffnend und sehr berührend und sehr nah und authentisch und ist so ein Hybridformat, das ich so noch nirgendwo anders gehört habe. Und würde mich voll freuen, wenn ihr reinhört.
Und damit sind wir wieder am Ende von Läuft. Wenn ihr Feedback habt, schreibt uns eine E-Mail an medien@epd.de oder kommentiert unsere Beiträge auf Social Media. Ihr findet EPD Medien auf X und LinkedIn, das Grimme-Institut auf Instagram, LinkedIn und Threads. Mich findet ihr dort auch überall. Wenn ihr noch jemanden kennt, der sich fragt, was die Aufgabe von Journalismus heute eigentlich ist, dann schickt dieser Person doch einfach jetzt direkt einen Link zu dieser Folge. Und in 2 Wochen habe ich zum Jahresende eine ganz besondere Folge für euch. Die Geschichte hinter der Geschichte, eines der größten Medienskandale der letzten 20 Jahre. Wenn ihr das nicht verpassen wollt, abonniert Läuft am besten direkt in eurer Podcast-App. Wir hören uns hoffentlich dann wieder. Bis dahin, gönnt euch gutes Programm. Läuft ist eine Produktion von EPD Medien und Grimme Institut im Jahr 2024. Redaktion Lars Gresser, Alexander Matzkeit und Michael Ritter.